Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Thank you, everybody, for attending. This is the presentation for our 2023 results. And this really explains what we do and why we do it and why we think it works. We are a buy and build group, and we're buying manufacturers of scientific instruments. And the reason we think it's worth is what we call the three pillars of shareholder value. And by the way, shareholder value is the purpose of our existence. And we think the three pillars are those: long-term drivers, which is a secular growth in university education. And most of our seeds go to universities, but for research purposes. And the other one is desire of everybody who does anything to always optimize what they're doing. And when you're doing physical things, you can't optimize them without measuring them. And we make measurement instruments. So these two things are going to be there in 20, 50 years, and 100 years will still be true. The third one on the picture is a large deal pool. Well, if you do a buy and build, you have to have targets. And when we started the business, we found that there was 2,000 companies in our sector in the UK alone. So that is really a large pool of companies, and a lot of them will need to change hands every year. And then the third one is maybe a bit less obvious. It's low capital use. So we have, you know, not a lot of equipment and very little working capital. And the impact of that, I will explain. Your typical buy and bill exercise is a quoted company. And it says, well, I'm on a multiple of 20 and I buy this company on a multiple of 10. So I've doubled my money. But what we're doing is something different. We borrow money from the bank. Typically, it's cost us, you know, 3-4%. Recently, it's more, but not a lot more because we've hedged a lot of our borrowings, and then we use it to buy companies which, on average, give us a multiple of 5x, which means that we get 20% on our money. So that's a much more efficient way of creating value. But the only problem is that the profit that you buy, if we pay 5x EBIT, it's EBIT and it's earnings, but it's not cash. And it's only with cash that you can repay the bank. And therefore, we need good cash conversion. And we'll talk later about cash conversion, but it's always, you know, very high figures. And this is a very important part of our model. So, you know, we're a well-diversified company. We sell to the whole world. We sell to a number of scientific disciplines. We sell to industry as well as universities. And on the slide, you have, you know, very, very small percentage of the people we do business with. So a buy and build strategy is based on buy and build. So it's based on M&A and on having organic growth in these companies. And so the execution is just as important as the strategy. And we believe that a key thing in that execution is discipline. So we've only done 23 acquisitions in 18 years, but we're very cautious to buy only excellent companies. And they've produced good growth. So our sales have gone up by 21% compound over the years. And organic is 8%. So that means without the deals, we still have 8% growth. So they're growing companies. And their profits are growing even faster at 28%, including 11% organic. So this is very important. And this is what has enabled us to pay dividends, which is what I believe shareholders expect of us. And over the last 18 years, we've paid dividends totaling 7.5x the admission price of the company when we readmitted in 2005. So the next sheet shows the management team. So I'm introducing you there, Brad Ormsby, our CFO, who's going to do the bulk of the presentation if I give him a chance, Mark Lavelle, our Chief Operating Officer, and Tim Prestridge, who joined this year as Group Business Development Director. The next, and we'll talk about what they do a bit later. Next page is just acquisition. So we need to be disciplined. We need to buy a strong exporting company in global niche markets. Not all the instruments are in global niche markets, so we try to pick those which are and which have solid EBIT margins. Our gold standard is 25% EBIT margin, and which generate profit, cash flow. We pay typically 4 to 6 times. We've had one outlier 3 times and one outlier 7 times, and the rest is an average of 5 times EBIT. So as I've explained, 20% return on our money, and we borrow up to 3 times EBITDA. And in the past, it was around 3 to 4%. Now it could go up as much as 8%, but interest rates are quietening down now. So the deal take a long time to do. A lot of them fail because we are disciplined. There are years where we don't do any deals, years when we do many, but we try to be very ethical, and we have a reputation for being very ethical, which means that the whole process is conducted in an honorable fashion, and we have the financing before we agree a deal, which means that the seller has the certainty of concluding and concluding it according to the terms that he's agreed. And then we do the deal, we do the best we can with these companies. We'll tell you more about it later. And we reduce debt and reinvest in the further acquisition. So on the right, there's two deals we did last year in 2003. They were small deals. We'll discuss them a bit later. And then the next sheet shows you the history of all the deals we've done. So you see, we got good years and bad years. It's like the wine, and you have to cope with that and be patient and disciplined. Post-acquisition, introduction of good financial controls. This is done by Brad. And we leave the companies with a lot of autonomy, and we promote excellence within these companies. That's the job that is performed excellently by Mark and Tim. And they really coach and help the managing directors of these companies to achieve the best results and to have excellence everywhere. And we focus on the long term, and we want all of our employees to be entrepreneurs, but entrepreneurs who think in the long term. So next page is the key messages of this presentation. We've kept doing an unchanged strategy and executed in the same fashion. We've done 2 small deals. We've strengthened the management team by the appointment in February of Tim, and we believe the long-term fundamentals are absolutely positive and keep being so. We've achieved record performance in 2023, organic revenue, in organic profit, and in cash generation, and in adjusted earnings per share. And as a result of this, we've increased the full year dividend to 17%, which is a total dividend for the year of 95p. Some of you who've known the company for a long time will know that the company was originally IPO'd at 95p in 2003. So it's quite a satisfaction to be able to give these shareholders 100% on their money every year. And current trading, when we start the year with a solid order book and good orders, we live in a very volatile geopolitical environment, which is not good for an international business for us, but it's been like this for some time. And so we can navigate it properly. And 2 years ago, we bought Geotek, which is a third of our business now. It's a very successful business that we bought. And a third of that business is the coring business, which consists of doing approximately one expedition a year. So it's a sizable part of our business. And this year, We haven't, at this point, signed any coring deal. So there's uncertainty whether we will have a coring expedition in the course of 2024. And these are thin on the ground. And we are the only people who do these coring expedition with gas hydrate. Is a very interesting thing, but it's a bit erratic. So we know we have to live with that. And I'm passing on to Brad, who will present the results.
Hello, everyone. I'll take you through the key highlights for last year. We've navigated through the past couple of years of inflationary challenges, supply chain issues, and coming out the other side of that. And overall, having been through all of that, we've still managed to deliver what I believe is a good performance in 23. So what's actually happened? Total revenues up 20% to 136 million. That's a combination of 15% organic revenue growth, and that's at a rate which we maintained from the half year. And then also a contribution from our current year two acquisitions, and also a full year contribution from Geotek that we acquired in 22. Now, the 20% increase in revenue resulted in a 16% increase in adjusted operating profit, and that's up to 35 million from 30 million in 22. And that 16%, sadly, by the time we got down to earnings per share, whilst it provided us with record adjusted earnings per share, which is up 3% to 374.6 pence, a lot was swallowed up with the increase in UK corporation tax and also borrowing costs. And I'll come back to that a little bit later. Now, going back to organic revenue growth, that was supported both by increases in organic order intake, that's 7% up on the prior year, and also with the alleviation of the supply chain issues that we'd faced previously, together with continued improvement in our operations, which enabled us to steadily reduce our oversized order book and end the year still with a strong order book of 17 weeks of organic orders. Now, as I've said plenty of times before, the group retains an excellent track record of converting profit to cash. And this year, we generated 31 million cash from operations at a cash conversion of 90%. Now, that's an improvement on the previous year of 80%, but it's still not quite as high a level as we'd like. We'd like to be in the high 90s for cash conversion. But the cash generation as a whole still serves to allow us to continue our policy of delivering progressively increasing dividend returns for shareholders. And as David mentioned before, we've increased the full year dividend by 17% to 95 pence per share, with a final dividend proposed of 68 pence per share. The cash generation also allows us to support our buy and build strategy in acquiring new businesses, and we acquired two new businesses, Bossanova and Henniker, and David will talk about those later, as well as settling the full earn-out from the Geotek acquisition in 2022. Now, all of that takes us to net debt, which reduced from 52 million at the start of the year to 45.1 million at the end of the year. And that's despite these acquisitions and settlement, the earn-out, together with also an investment of 5 million in capital expenditure, 7 million paid to shareholders in dividends, and now close to 10 million paid in tax and interest. Overall, we retain a strong balance sheet, which is a key feature of our group. We have significant headroom in our covenants, and our gearing is only at 1.38 times against the covenant limit of 3 times. And we retain significant borrowing capacity and flexibility in our facilities such that we can fund future acquisitions. So overall, a strong picture. Now, looking forward to 24, the number of positives and negatives weighing on the group's outlook. Geopolitics, David mentioned that before. They've not been more tense in my entire lifetime. I'm now 48, so it's a fair while. At the same time, offsetting this slightly, we can say, that inflation has calmed, supply chain issues have generally abated. At the same time, we still have a little bit of uncertainty around the Geotek coring contract and the timing of that. But with start of 24 coming along with a strong organic order book, still satisfactory order intake, which we'll talk about a little bit in depth later, and our business is well equipped to face the future, we can be positive about 24 at this stage. I just want to pick a couple of things from this slide. The first one, I touched on inflation just before. I think we've navigated that well, and the evidence is that our organic businesses have managed to maintain their own margins before central costs. So very pleased about that, although the effect of increasing stepped central costs this year has resulted in a 1% reduction in overall operating margins. Our interest has increased as a consequence of a full year of the debt we incurred on the initial acquisition of Geotek. Plus, we also settled the earn-out this year. And just as a reminder, the majority of our debt is hedged at around 5%. So we have certainty about our borrowing costs. Now, moving on to taxation, our effective tax rate on adjusted earnings is 21.8%. That's up 4.5% on the previous year. And it really is a direct reflection of the 6% increase in UK corporation tax headline rate from the start of April last year. And putting that 4.5% into context, if you apply that at 4.5% of our adjusted operating profit, it's £1.5 million of extra tax we paid, which is equivalent to 22 pence of earnings. And then lastly, we do have adjusting items that take us to the statutory result. The largest components of these are £12 million for non-cash amortization of the intangible assets that we're required to recognize when we acquire businesses, and the £4 million charge that relates to the change in fair value of the earnout that we settled by June 23. Order intake. And as usual, I'll just remind everyone about the graph that we have. And we present this every 6 months. And so there's, on this normal graph, three lines, a red line, a black line, and a green line. The red line is our annual sales budget. So we set this once a year as part of our budgeting process, and that's really the target. The black line is the last trailing 12 months of orders, and the green line is the last 4 months of orders annualized, so multiplied by three. The far end of the graph is the end of December 23. So what are we looking for? Well, ideally, the black line is at least touching the red line, in which case you've had sufficient orders with which to satisfy your sales budget. And ideally, your green line will be at least tracking the red line. That way you've got relatively consistent orders, but it is quite clear that as a shorter term measure, the green line is always a lot more jagged. And what we also did after the acquisition of Geotek, before Geotek became an organic business, which it will do from the start of this year, is we also included a dotted lines of the same color to show the difference between organic and total. So what can you see from the graphs? Well, the first thing, if you look at the dotted lines, is that the black line was ahead of the dotted red line for the majority of the year. And that really shows why we had 7% increase in our organic order intake, and why we were able to finish the year still with a strong order book on an organic basis of 17 weeks. Now, a couple of other things to note. One, if you look at the solid lines towards the end of the year, you can see there's a gap between the red line and the black line. And, you know, that reflects not having in the last 12 months a Geotek coring contract. And just as a reminder, the revenue for this year's, as in 23's Geotek coring contract that was recognized in the second half of this year, related to a contract which was signed and in the order book during 22. So the last thing to note is that you can see, if you look at the December 23 compared to December 22, that we don't have quite the same peak that we had at the end of 22 when China reopened from its lockdowns. And that peak continued into the start of 2023, January, February, and resulted in a very strong start to the year for us. And in fact, you would have seen when we reported our half-year results that China, Hong Kong was up by 78% in the first half of last year. So a strong comparative for us to compare with at the start of this year. And what's happened since the start of the year? Well, we've had organic orders at a similar level to the same time last year, albeit with, you know, a high comparative with the exceptional level of orders from China. And this slide really reconciles between the profit contribution of our businesses from 22 to 23. And they're the big green blocks at either end of the slide. And reconciling between those, we've got organic growth. And you can see we've had nice organic growth, a good chunk. And that really, you know, is evidenced through the fact that more than half of our businesses achieved record performance this year. But at the same time, with the smaller red block, you can see a few of them move backwards. And then the last block we have relates to the contribution to our profit from the two acquisitions this year and also a full year contribution from Geotek. Just a reminder to everyone, heavily weighted to H2 last year. Just briefly took through balance sheet and cash flows. The key figure on this slide is adjusted net debt. That's reduced from 52 million to 45 million. Obviously explained a bit about that earlier. You know, we deleveraged, gearing went down from 1.6x to 1.38x. So, you know, we're able to continue to deleverage despite the fact that, you know, our cash conversion has not been quite as good as we like. And where do we evidence that? Well, in working capital, where in normal circumstances, working capital is usually around 10% of annual revenue. At the moment, it's closer to 20%, and that's simply because over the last few years, we've had to invest in inventory to ensure that we could meet our customers' needs. As the supply chain issues have abated, we've been pleased to build momentum in reducing lead times and delighting our customers. And our businesses are cautiously concerned not to lose that. But at the same time, we're very, very cognizant of the fact that we want to make sure we can reduce the amount of inventory and working capital. And slowly but surely, working with our suppliers, and we need to do this carefully, that we can help reduce that level of stock. But it's going to take us a little while because managing those relationships, it's not like we are a business that has significant control over our suppliers. You know, if you're a Ford and you say you want to destock for a couple of months and you say to your suppliers, please stop for 3 months, they go, okay, no problem. They have the power. For us, we're a small purchaser of most suppliers' products. So we have to work with them in a manner which is a little bit more careful. But we will do so and at the same time work hard to try and improve that cash conversion and reduce the volume of working capital. And return on total invested capital, ROTIC, another key measure for our business. And in its simplest form, as a direct function of the multiples we pay for the businesses we acquire. And to improve ROTIC, you need to either improve financial performance and or buy businesses at lower multiples. And you can see on the left-hand side where we started, we paid close to 5x for FTT. We started just over 20%. Now, we had a couple of big cliffs. You can see in the middle of the graph in 2012, 2013, when we paid 6x for what were then large acquisitions for us, and they had a downward mechanical effect on our return on capital. And obviously, towards the end of the graph, you can see when we made our largest ever acquisition of Geotek at 7x, the same thing happening there. So what's happened this year? Well, the organic businesses have performed well, and the consequence of that can be seen in ROTIC, which has improved from 28.7%. to 33.5%. And having then looked at the total, which includes the Geotek acquisition and that mechanical drop that we had, which was in the region of 8%. We've started this year with 20.6% return on capital, finished the year with 22.7%. So good performance overall, moving in the right direction. And of course, the point with the larger deals is that there really is a quid pro quo. You know, as you buy bigger businesses, you do get that large improvement in earnings, but at the same time, you get that same downward pressure on return on capital. And that's what we have to weigh up all the time when we're looking at potentially larger deals. My penultimate slide on diversification, but you can see on the left-hand side, we've got a split of the group's companies by revenue, and you can see no one single company overly dominates. Our businesses are diversified by scientific application. They make different scientific instruments for different scientific markets. Geographically, there is no one single region or country that overly dominates. And we've added some extra information for this year for end market revenue analysis for the group as a whole. And 25% geotechnical, around 20% of our businesses sell into the industrial stroke process optimization market. Then somewhere in the region of 40% into life science / semicon, and the scientific techniques and the instruments used in both the university and industrial research for these two differing industries are very, very similar. And that's the reason why we've amalgamated them. But hopefully that's a bit of extra useful information for our shareholders. And this slide really looks at some key statistics about the financial success of our group. Revenue, profits, and earnings per share have all grown strongly over the history of our group. And this year we've had record revenue, record profits, and also record earnings per share. We've had an 8%+ organic revenue compound growth rate over the last 17 years, with an 11% profit growth as well on the same basis. So for us, whilst we are looking to buy sustainably profitable businesses, there's really good evidence of the group's ability to ensure that the businesses it acquires also grow post-acquisition. And we do believe that we can keep growing that revenue and profit CAGR as well. Dividends have increased by at least 10% per annum. And this year, we've increased the dividend by 17% to 95 pence per share for the full year. And that still is a CAGR of 23% for the dividend. And then lastly, our continued focus on cash generation serves to enable us to be able to reduce debt quickly, make space for further acquisitions, and of course, continue to provide increasing dividends and better returns for shareholders. And on that note, I will pass back to David, who's going to talk through the group's strategy.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Yes, so buy and build, as we said, is a mixture of M&A and organic growth. Two words on M&A about the companies we bought recently. Henniker, which is a company which is involved in surfaces and is how to treat surfaces with plasma. So basically, you put these surfaces in a machine and the plasma changes the characteristic of the surface. We bought this company on a multiple of 4x. It's making a little bit more than £500,000. And the cash payment was £1.8 million, which could be supplemented by a £500,000 earnout. The earnout period is virtually finished. And it was an excellent company that we saw before the lockdown, and it fulfilled all its promises over the period where we couldn't visit it. And it's an unusual company where the managing director is quite young and he decided to stay and he's happy running the company for us. Bossa Nova, which is in LA, is a very small company which images and digitalizes the appearance of tresses. It's about the hair business. It has an enormous proportion of that market, which is very small, so it's quite a small company. When we bought it, it made only $400,000 a year, and we paid 4x for it. But of course, Los Angeles is very far. The reason we were interested in buying a company so far is that we have another company called Dystron that we've had for 8 years, and which tests the physical properties of hair for exactly the same customers. And we believe, a lot of synergies offering these same customers two complementary offerings and having very little competition in both. And then the next one we just bought this year, post-balance sheet, called Luciole. It's in Switzerland, very close to Geneva. It makes OTDR, which is an instrument which characterizes fiber optic over short distances. We have a company in Berkshire making OTDRs, which characterize fiber optic over long distances, like 50 kilometers for communication purposes. But this is more about communication, for instance, in a plane. So you want to have a 100 meter or 50 meter long fiber optic, and you want to make sure it's impeccable, because a plane, you can't play with safety. So these are the instruments which check that. So again, it's a small company making £500,000, which is virtually £500,000. And we paid 4x for that with a potential earnout of £500,000. So three deals we did recently, very moderate multiples, and we think they're all exciting companies, and two of them with quite a lot of synergy with existing companies in the group. So once we bought these companies, then you have to make them work and make sure they prosper. And that's the job of Mark Lavelle and Tim Prestidge, and they're going to talk to you a little bit about our organic model.
Thank you, David. So as David says, we buy these businesses and then we seek to help them grow further. And I think it's just important to mention, first of all, that we are not a turnaround organization. So the businesses we buy are all highly successful businesses. So what we're doing is building on excellence already. We also have a fundamental belief that because we're talking about very small businesses operating in very small niches, that the speed and flexibility that these businesses have is a really huge asset. And the last thing we want to do is encumber them with huge bureaucracy. So whereas there are many organizations around the world who would like to buy companies, integrate them, focus highly on synergies. And, you know, I always say that within a few seconds of a deal being done, they've moved the finance function to Boston, the R&D to China, production to India, and you just got a little sales office left with the founder's logo ripped off and the new American corporate structure logo on top of it. That's absolutely not what we do. And our business view is that for us, with these tiny niche businesses, that autonomy trumps integration. So what we do instead is we're looking to add to the businesses and try and plug some gaps or give them the confidence and the knowledge to grow the businesses further. The sorts of things that they tend to have not done is perhaps expanded worldwide as much as they might have done. We've got many businesses that have now, and therefore we can offer help, assistance and advice, both frankly from companies that have done it successfully, and sometimes companies that haven't done it so successfully are also quite interesting people to talk to. So we encourage the MDs of these businesses to talk to each other a lot, to share ideas, to share experiences and good practice, and also get their direct reports, production, R&D, sales and finance, to interact with the other businesses, just to learn what good looks like and generally raise the bar. A couple of things that we tend to get them to do, which they haven't done before, is very much focus on monthly performance. If the general feeling is that the year will be what it'll be, and we might have a little push at the year end, that tends to lead to lesser performance than asking the businesses to produce a forecast for each month and then deliver to that forecast. And that way, we end up just squeezing a little bit more into every month and then a lot more into every year. As I hinted there, you know, we view the senior team as extremely important. So the managing director, and typically in these businesses, you need to invent a product, produce it, sell it, and count the money. So most of our businesses are built around the concept of an MD and then an R&D director, a production director, a sales director, and a finance director. And we spend a lot of time with them and have developed some leadership training courses to help them understand the impact that they can have as leaders, rather than in many cases what they've used to be doing, which was very much technical experts, and the two are very different. Every year, and in fact this year it happened just earlier this week on Monday and Tuesday, we get all the MDs together and very much focus on the things that we see as the critical feature for the year. And this year we were talking about developing those teams, about strategy and ambition, and particularly about new product development. I think that's probably enough from me. So let me pass over to Tim, who's particularly strong on the strategy and ambition side of the businesses, and underpinning a little bit of that with some good finance and governance controls as well.
Thanks very much, Mark. So I'm going to just layer a few things on top of what Mark has described there in terms of our organic model. I think if Mark and I were to describe really the key and most important aspects of our roles, then that falls into just essentially four or five points. It's around, firstly, the governance and compliance aspects. So just being confident and making certain that the subsidiary companies in the group are behaving appropriately and they have the correct levels of fundamental sort of controls in place. And beyond that, then it really is all about talent. So being confident that we have the strongest leaders running the companies, and that they in turn are building around them a strong leadership team, and that team is in turn building a credible and ambitious strategy, and that they are then executing that strategy with urgency. So no coincidence then that, broadly speaking, the points on this slide align with those things. So if I think about the top left corner first, the sort of finance and governance side, those are what you might think of mandatory elements of control. So how does that type of thing fit within an autonomous management structure, a decentralized management structure? Maybe the best way to describe that is, well, absolutely what we don't do is to take that off the companies and centralize it all and do it all ourselves and put those sort of controls in ourselves. So the model is much rather that we have a framework of what has to happen, what we expect to happen. And it's very much about then making sure that that is pushed down into the companies, you know, the companies and the leadership within the companies is held accountable for implementing the necessary governance and the necessary controls to make sure that we have the right level of control across the organization. What that then does in turn is allow them to develop the strengths themselves around some of the other not mandatory, but you know, highly recommended aspects, particularly in terms of, so for example, management accounts and also more control of balance sheet metrics, for example. So pushing that accountability down through the organization ensures that we have the robust controls where they need to be, but also allows the organizations to develop those further strengths themselves. If I think about the autonomous structure, one of the things to highlight there is that it shouldn't be thought of as something which is automatic. In some sense, at least, it's earned. And the thing that I'd particularly highlight that earns it is delivery or operational excellence. So executing on the actions and executing on the commitments that the companies have agreed to. So that's where the sort of operational excellence comes from. So Mark and I very much see that in visiting the companies and meetings with the companies, if there are challenges in the sort of short to medium term delivery, those tend to, those would dominate the conversation, and there's therefore challenges in terms of the near term operational aspects of the business tend to take the lead. What we really want, of course, is that operational excellence and delivery is in place. The team is delivering that, and therefore we have. That sort of buys the right to focus very much on the long term. And that's really the fundamental aspect of the autonomous structure, which requires talent, the best possible talent in place, leading the organization. And that really sort of ties in with what I think Mark and I would see as probably the most important part of our role in terms of being confident that we have the best talent leading the organization, and they're developing around them the strongest team. The final point I wanted to highlight, just looking at the bottom right square there, is around the strategy and ambition. It's something that we've worked to develop a slightly better process over the last 12 months or so in terms of really ensuring that the ambition is captured in the strategies for the organizations. It's very much the responsibility of the individual businesses to generate their strategy. It's not something that Judges imposes, but we've helped by developing a structure in which to do that. But the key thing is that that structure cascades down to actions as soon as possible. So in a simplistic sense, it's about understanding for each of the companies, where are we now? Where do we want to be? How are we going to get there? But then who's going to do what by when? And across the management team on this call, it wouldn't be realistic for us to say, yes, we have a handle on the top 100 actions across the group that we need to have done to be able to drive growth. But part of the magic of our structure is we do have that information. The companies themselves have developed, using that sort of structure, the top 4 or 5 or 6 things that they absolutely have to deliver and execute on to drive the ambition that they have. And so that making sure that the strategic plan process cascades down to action is one of the most important aspects that Mark and I have been putting in place. I'll hand back to you, David.
Thank you very much, Mark and Tim. So just 2 words about the outlook and the investment case. The outlook, we repeat, we have a very strong business model with strong cash generation and a strong balance sheet. Our long-term fundamentals are positive, and we absolutely focus on shareholder value, which we believe is the purpose of the company. Uncertainty remains in our environment. The geopolitical environment is very dicey at this point, and we're a very international company, but we can live with it unless it gets much worse. And of course, we're helped by a very competitive sterling, because whenever there is tension in the world, sterling goes down, which helps us. Current trading, we start the year with a healthy order book, reasonably good order intake. We still have, as I explained, the uncertainty on the timing of the next geotech coring expedition, and we have explained that we were comfortable with the current market expectation for the year. So the investment case, you know, we have a diverse portfolio, sustainable reserve, growing dividends. We believe there's a lot of targets. We like the long-term drivers of our business. We are completely focused on shareholder value, profitability, cash generation, debt reduction, and dividend growth. We've promised to grow the dividend by no less than 10% every year, and we've done this for the past 15 years, but the actual compound annual growth rate was 23%. And finally, but not least, our shares are free of inheritance tax if they've been held for 2 years. And that's it. Thank you very much for listening. Questions and answers.
And we're going to kick off with questions on geotech. We don't want to completely focus on geotech, but there are four or five questions. The first is there any revenue or profitability for geotech coring expeditions built into forecast guidance for full year 24 or 25?
No, we have, as we've explained, we are happy with the guidance, although we may not have a coring expedition. So the 24 forecast is achievable without a coring expedition.
And could you talk a little bit about the lumpiness of geotech's revenues and whether this will always remain a feature or whether there are measures that the business intends to take that will help smooth out revenues in the future?
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, the business, the geotech business, is made of three parts. There's a business making and selling instruments, which is what the rest of the judges business does. And it is not particularly lumpy, although some of these instruments can be quite expensive. That makes it a bit more lumpy, but it's absolutely not lumpy business. Then there's the coring business, which is very lumpy because it's typically one expedition a year. We've explained that when we bought it, and usually contracting with a government which organizes the expedition, and there's other players in the expedition. So all the ducks must be in a row before that boat can go, and that will remain as lumpy as it is, but we think it's an extremely interesting business and very profitable when you have it. And then you have the service business, which is not lumpy at all, and which is made of a bit of rental of equipment and a lot of contracts with big mining or oil companies to digitalize the collections of cores. They all have enormous collection of cores, and all this information, we take it out and we digitalize, and you can have all this information in your laptop. And we believe that this is a very interesting business, that every oil or mining company should have that. And we want to grow that. We think this is where the growth is in geotech. And as we grow this part of geotech, of course, the coring as a percentage will be lower, and the company as a whole will feel a lot less lumpy. But we don't want to give up that coring business, because it's an excellent business and it produces a lot of cash. And it would be nice if it came in every month, but it's not the case. But we like to come in every year, and that's possible, but not certain.
And if you can say, what's the approximate level of revenue from a geotech coring contract? What does it typically generate? And are there any current discussions as to a potential new contract in full year 24?
Yeah, it's maybe, you know, 3 to 5 million. And, you know, you could expect, if we say we haven't signed a contract yet, that there would be discussions, yes.
And you stated that Geotek EBIT was 9% below its EBIT earn-out threshold. Does this relate to the base earn-out figure, i.e. 6.4 million, the cap of 11.4, or something else?
It's the cap of 11.4. It's absolutely the cap of 11.4 we're talking about, because that's what we paid the earn-out on. So that was the sustained. What we saw as the sustainable EBIT, which is slightly below for 2023.
And final one on Geotek. In general, the demand for judges as a whole has never been destroyed, only postponed, say Brexit or COVID. Would this be the same for Geotek coring?
Brexit is completely irrelevant, I think, to Geotek coring. We're talking also about COVID. COVID did affect Geotek coring a lot because in the year of COVID, they had a campaign in China, which hasn't taken place and may take place at some point in the future. So Brexit is irrelevant, but COVID was certainly a big problem for Geotek coring.
And where do you see the most scope for improvement across the business in the Judges family?
To be honest, it's very different at every business. Every business is in a different industry, different markets, and they've got different challenges. I would say that, in most of our businesses, the operational performance is getting better and better. Our financial reporting analysis is getting better and better. But we've got peaks and troughs. So I think it really is a huge variety of different tweaks in different businesses. And probably I think that if there were one that was larger than the other, I think I'd probably go for speed of product development. Many of the businesses have traditionally come from a very sort of scientific and slightly academic background, and there had been a tendency before we got involved to perhaps develop products of academic interest, and not just as in things that universities would buy, but things that the R&D director quite fancied developing. So certainly, given our involvement, that there's been a tendency more towards products that will actually sell, and I do think that's something which we continue to try and encourage as we buy businesses, just to be a little bit more selective about one or two new products and make sure they're ones that are going to have an impact on the bottom line.
And on margin reduction, with organic at 15% and M&A aside, should we expect some operating leverage? Should we just look at central costs, or is there any more detail in the turnover of any division or lower margin contract or anything that may have an effect on the mix?
I think the key point is that the organic businesses managed to maintain their margins, and that's despite inflation. So that's, credit to them for having, utilized the capabilities they have and been able to put their prices up as appropriate and fairly as appropriate, as well as how they've managed the cost base of their business as well. We've been open about the fact that, there's been a reasonably big increase in central costs this year, and that's largely people related. It wouldn't expect it to continue at that rate in future years on an ongoing basis.
And a question specifically on Armfield. Did it have a better year in 2023 after a couple of poor ones in 21 and 22?
Maybe I'll answer this one. Yes. But we still need a lot of improvement. But we have a new managing director who's doing a very good job, and we're very pleased with the progress he's making.
And as most of your business is export, can you explain how you hedge currency?
Yes, I'll do this one. I mean, what we're trying is to cover the risk of losing money on contracts. So if we contract to sell something in a currency, and we obviously have the bulk of our costs in sterling, if sterling goes up, then we make less money on that contract, or we take the risk of losing it. So we calculate the sum of all these sales that we have in dollars and in euro, they're the main currency we're dealing with, and we hedge them with options. So we know roughly every month how much dollars we have coming in, and we want to make sure that we get a minimum amount of sterling for our dollars or a minimum amount of sterling for our euros, so we're not going to lose money on these sales. So but it's options. So the result is, you know, if sterling is very low, we do very well, as everybody expects us to do well, and we don't exercise these options. But if sterling were to shoot up, which doesn't happen very often, then we don't lose money on these contracts and we're doing still well. So this is the concept that we're using.
And for companies within the group that performed below expectations in 2023, were there any common themes?
Mark, do you want to deal with this one?
That's an interesting question. And I think the answer is actually no. Again, pretty much all of our businesses are in different markets. Most of them are non-cyclic. Occasionally we have a business where there's some element of cyclicality, but that doesn't often happen. So if I look at the small amount of lower performance in the business, I think it's really a different issue at every business, and things we feel pretty confident about fixing over the relatively short term.
And you expect inventories to stabilise now, having increased during the supply chain disruptions?
The aim is not for them to stabilise, because what we found is that the inventories have tended to stay at relatively high levels, that the market has tended to be a little bit conservative in that region, and felt that the sort of changes since COVID probably need hanging on to. And our view is that over the next year or two, that we should be moving back towards a more normal situation. So it's probably a little bit, inventory levels are probably a little bit more like they were at the peak of COVID now than we had expected, but they need to move down a bit, and we see, we're pretty confident that will happen.
And could you give more colour on the 4 million fair value movement on contingent consideration? Was this a release of provision, and which business didn't hit target and why?
No. This is relating to the change in the fair value of the earnout that we paid. First, it's a charge. So if it was a release of a provision, we'd have a credit. This is absolutely in relation to the fact that we have to value the future earnout at the end of December at its fair value. And part of that fair valuing is that we had discounted the cash that was going to be paid at the point of settlement of the earnout, and part of it related to the issue of shares at the date we settled the earnout. And in relation to valuation of the shares in particular, the share price appreciated between the 31st of December and when we settled the earnout, and consequently you have to measure that difference in fair value. So our share price, let's say it was at £80 at the end of December, I can't remember the exact number now, and close to £100 when we settled it, that increase we're not allowed to put back into the initial acquisition consideration, as the accounting standards won't allow that. So that increase we've had to essentially recognise as a charge in the income statement.
And do you foresee further increases to central costs, or do you now have the resources you need to fulfil your growth ambitions?
I'd probably, if it's all right, to keep going, because I touched on this a little bit earlier. We've had some reasonable increases this year. I don't think we see that rate of increase as expected or as a sustained increase. At the same time, it's clear to us in the structure we have that if we continue to acquire a number of businesses, that we will need more oversight from our the roles that we have, which is essentially what we might call like a COO role. And that would be a stepped cost if you need to recruit someone. At the same time, we also are trying to see if we can promote from within as well, and that's an approach we're looking at. But at some point, if we have another 10 businesses, Tim and Mark and any internal help we have may not have enough bandwidth to be able to deal with that, so we'd probably need another additional support there. So there will be stepped costs at some point, but not in the sort of size that we've had this year. Hopefully that gives you a reasonable answer to that.
And given the investment in new talent and product development, do you think your long-term organic growth prospects are higher now than, say, 5 years ago? And can you quantify the uplift?
I would certainly say that we have, and there's two aspects to look at that, I guess. Naturally, as the size and scale of the organization grows, we would expect organic growth naturally to play a larger and larger part in the future growth and ambition of the organization. So we're most certainly putting in place the processes and the ambitions and the talent to be able to be able to make that happen, and so I guess the answer is yes, we absolutely expect that to be a growing portion of the growth of the organization.
And do you issue shares as part of an acquisition? Just wondering why the earnings per share is relatively flat. Is it management options? You did cover this, Brad, but obviously someone wants clarity.
And I'm happy to explain that again. Our profits were up by adjusted operating profits up by 16%. Our earnings per share only up by 3%. There were three specific things, one of which was particularly significant. The first one being the increase in corporation tax. That increased by 6% from the start of April, so essentially a 4.5% increase. So that was a big effect. And as I mentioned before, 22 pence is essentially the 4.5% increase that affected us. So that's why, one reason. Of course, we had a full year effect of interest, and we did issue some shares as part of the settlement of the Geotech earnout, which was approximately a 3% dilution. So those three things, what came into play.
And as the cost of acquiring new businesses has gone up, how has the rise in interest rates negatively affected the financial outcome?
Yeah, well, when we see the cost of buying these businesses, of course, when we buy bigger businesses, we have to pay more. But I don't think otherwise the cost of buying these businesses have increased. And clearly, interest cost is a very important cost to be taken into account, because this is the arbitrage we're doing. Do we get 20% on our money from the companies we buy? And you pay, if you pay 8% on your debt rather than 3% or 4%, it reduces your margin. Of course, we hedged the very early stage, the debt taken on to buy Geotech. So we have a very favorable fixed interest on that. And but of course, the half of the earnout, which was paid in cash, we had to pay current interest rates. And of course, they are higher than what we pay on the rest. And interest rates are now, of course, I believe, have stabilized and are going to go down now. Maybe not as quickly as were promised in the past, but they're definitely going to go down. And all the predictions are that they're going to stabilize and not go back to negative levels like we had before. So I think we have to... We have to accept that within 2-3 years we go back to a new normal, which is probably going to have a couple of points above what we had in the recent years. Yeah, but given the return we get on the companies we buy, and given the small part of that which is eaten with interest in normal times, I think it leaves us a very good margin. But of course, if we buy much larger businesses, and if we buy them regularly, we'll have a low return. And on that, you know, of course, interest expense start eating up a more substantial proportion of your income. Yeah.
Could you clarify whether geotech is paid by the customer in advance or after a coring expedition? When is revenue recognized compared to when cash is received?
Well, that's definitely for Brad.
Okay, well, I have to caveat this by saying that it is not straightforward, and I'll do my best to make it as simple as possible, but there is a lot of nuances. But, you know, in big picture, in terms of cash, we get a lot in advance of the actual activity of the coring. Now, there's a lot of preparation you have to do to get ready for the activity and the expedition. And so there's a lot of effort that needs to be expended, and we're usually paid a reasonable amount at the start of when we agree a contract, and then also an amount when we arrive on site. So by the time we've actually moved everything to the site where we're actually going to perform the work, we've been paid nicely in advance, and then you're then paid in stages as you go through for the remainder of that. Now, that's the payment. In terms of the revenue recognition, you recognize no revenue until you actually start the work on site. So everything you do in preparation, you get no benefit in your income statement for. And then it's treated like a somewhat complicated version of percentage of completion accounting. And so you will recognize a certain amount of the revenue as you progress through the rest of that contract, but it's not completely straightforward. The consequence of that is that it's not as easy to forecast the timing of the revenue and just exactly how much you will get, because it will really depend with a bit of hindsight on how the contract is progressing.
Fabulous. Thank you very much, Brad. It's not the end of questions, but it's all we've got time for. David, do you have any closing remarks?
I wanted to thank you and Tim. I think also my colleagues who participated in this, but mostly those of you who took the trouble to come and listen to us for an hour, and the interest you have in judges. And I wish you a good year. And if you're a shareholder, I wish you a very prosperous year.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.